Scars remind you that your past is real. You can't run away from it, but you can still be a very dangerous motherfucker.
Retired Navy SEAL David Goggins is described as one of the toughest men on the planet.
When I was 297 pounds trying to be a Navy SEAL, the scariest thing in the world to me, even to this day, was that that could have been the rest of my life. Fuck that. I want to be someone that I'm proud of. Just by going to war with myself every day, I gain confidence. Like, you go to work, you put your suit and tie on, I go into suffering every day. And that became my new norm. I gave myself no way out. If you can't control your own brain and your brain controls you, you're fucked. You gotta tell your brain where you wanna go and how you wanna go and how you wanna get there. Everybody thinks I'm Superman. I had to tell them the truth. My dad beat the hell out of me. I come from hell. Be born in that shit, man. You learn to survive, but surviving doesn't make you win. Surviving makes you a fucking cockroach. What is in us, we have no idea until we start trying hard. No one really finds themselves without going through suffering. Go to a dark place in your mind and figure out what the fuck you want to be. Find your purpose, and then you'll find the courage to start that journey.
The world is changing. Inspiration is everywhere. It has never been so easy to connect, share, and bring people together. We're learning from others and finding the best in ourselves. Challenging our beliefs. Sharing our vulnerability. Overcoming our fears. Transforming ourselves so we can transform the world. How far can we go?
This is London Real. I am Brian Rose. My guest today is...
Let me ask you a question. Are you pushing yourself hard? Are you getting out of your comfort zone? Are you putting pain into your life every single day? Or do you call your mommy when things get tough? You know, most people quit at 40%. That means you got 60% left in the tank. And that's what my guest is here to talk about this week. David Goggins, three-time Navy SEAL, Army Ranger, holding the pull-up record, 4,000 pull-ups in 17 hours, a guy that ran over 203 miles. That's what I'm talking about. David Goggins is in the house. I'm super excited to share this episode with him, and he talks all about getting out of your comfort zone, about how to be uncommon amongst uncommon men, about how to look at something called your accountability mirror every day, about how to go into the cookie jar when you need some inspiration. And that's just some of the knowledge that David Goggins drops today on the episode. I'll be honest, probably the most powerful guest that's ever sat in the London Real chair. This episode will change your life, just like his book, Can't Hurt Me, will also change it. Make sure you watch this to its completion and get out of that comfort zone and go and be great. This is London Real. I am Brian Rose. My guest today is David Goggins, the athlete, speaker, soldier, and New York Times bestselling author, often referred to as the hardest motherfucker on planet Earth. You're the only member of the U.S. Armed Forces to have completed Navy SEAL training, U.S. Army Ranger School, and Air Force Tactical Air Controller training, and you've competed in more than 60 ultramarathons, triathlons, and ultra-triathlons, running 101 miles in 19 hours, 203 miles in 48 hours, and breaking the world record for 4,030 pull-ups in just 17 hours. Your New York Times bestselling book and audiobook, Can't Hurt Me, shares your astonishing life story of childhood, physical abuse, poverty, and prejudice, and shows a path that anyone can follow to push past pain, demolish fear, and reach their full potential. David, it's a big honor. Welcome to London Real.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
T-
Tell me, what do you think of London and this city? And are we hard enough here?
Well, I know one thing, man. The fucking traffic is hard enough. It is brutal. So just getting here. But, you know, I'm having a hard time trying to find a place to run. But I'm spending a lot of time on, you know, the elliptical trainer. I'm making it work. I don't mind London at all. You know, I've been a lot of places in the world. London's good.
Yeah, you know, they actually have a history of being some pretty hard people. And I was here for the bombings in 77 and 07. And the one thing I noticed was the day after the bombings, everybody went back to work. And I was like, oh, this is old school. This is like, you know, 1940 Battle of Britain, where it's getting bombed every day. People just would just dust off. And the next day, they just got back to it.
That's badass.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of underlined. But yeah, the traffic will callous your mind.
Well, I like London more now after hearing that story.
Right?
Yeah.
I have to take you and show you some of this. You can see the shrapnel is still in there from the bombings down by the Thames River and stuff.
The bombings aren't badass, but the mentality of the people here, that's badass.
Yeah. No, it is for sure. You know, we've been watching you for about 2.5 years, man, so it's just great to have you here. And we've really been wanting to talk to you. And what I found has been interesting with you is watching you kind of change, because you seem to kind of change into a different person the last 2 years, 2.5 years, from when I first saw you on Rogan and Bill You and Rich Roll. And with the book, I know that you had to go really deep, you know,
right,
and get really vulnerable. And I know that's something that maybe you hadn't done much of before. And you've said before that writing the book was the most difficult thing in your life.
Right.
And after that intro, most people would find that hard to believe.
Right.
That writing a book is harder than running 203 miles.
By far.
Or doing 4,000 pull-ups. But can you explain why?
You know what, for me, in that book, so most of my life, people didn't know it. So, you know, my mom got abused physically, mentally by my dad. And so I kept everything from her, pretty much. So my childhood growing up, she was gone working 3 jobs. We lived in a $7 a month place for a lot of the time. And she had a hard way to go. Her soon-to-be husband got murdered, all that crap's in the book. So whenever I wanted to tell her something, it seemed like bad shit was always happening, not just to her, but to me also. But at a young age, I felt like I was the man of the house. So I didn't want her to know anything about my life, you know, like what I was going through. And like, you know, I had a learned disability. I still have a learned disability. You know, my dad beat the hell out of me. You know, school wasn't great for me. You know, I lived in a small town with a bunch of, there were a lot of rednecks there, a lot of people who didn't like black people. So everywhere I went, I was having all these kind of obstacles hit me in the face. So I just hit it. So I became a really closed person because I didn't want to stress her out anymore. So I became this person who walked around with like 2 sides of David Goggins. There's one side that was like, I'm a tough guy. That was the outside surface. But on the inside, I was a kid that was just hurting, that needed all kind of help, but no one knew it.
Right.
I never talked about it because why? That showed weakness. And my mom didn't need to hear it. At least that's what I thought. So, you know, for me to come out and be this vulnerable, because everybody thinks I'm Superman. So
I wonder why.
Yeah, everybody thinks I'm Superman. So I had to tell them the truth, you know, and the truth is very important. And for me, a lot of years of my life growing up, I lied a lot because didn't have a lot of friends, felt socially just all kind of awkward. I was hiding all kind of stuff. So you do whatever you can to create another human being that's acceptable, that you think is acceptable in society. And when I did that, all that came out was a bunch of shit, a bunch of lies, a bunch of filth, a bunch of nothing. So for me to come out and write a book about the real David Goggins, it was tough. It was tough, but that's the only way. If I want to help people out, the only way I can cut to the surface is say, look, guys, gals, whoever's reading this book, I am where I am now. You guys see this. And it would have been very easy to write a book about the hero, David Goggins. But the hero is not me. The hero is the person reading the book. But I had to tell him where I came from to give people hope that, wow, that's where he came from. He came from all these fucked up obstacles, and now he's there. I want to give people that kind of hope. So that's why it was tough. Because to give people hope, I had to take myself to the sewer to show people, hey, I come from hell. I come from hell. And a lot of it I created, not just society. Yeah, society helped me out, but I created a lot of the hell that I had to go through. I made this picture out to be a lot worse than what it was. It was bad, but I made it out to be, you know, insurmountable. So, yeah, we can be our worst enemy.
Why is the truth so important?
You know what? Because, first of all, it does set you free mentally, and it gives you a starting point. You have to have the truth to have a starting point. So when you, like, if I'm lying to you about who I am, or I'm lying to you about whatever, there's no starting point. There's a false reality.
Right.
You have to create the real reality. So that's what I call my accountability mirror in my book. That's the real reality. Where the fuck am I going to start from? So for me, I was lying to this, lying about that. So I had no starting point. Once you come face to face with who you are, you have a starting point. All right, I'm not real smart. I have no courage. I have no self-esteem. I have no nothing. Nothing. That's my starting point. Now we can move from there. But if I tell myself I'm strong, I have courage, I'm smart, and all these are lies, you continuously push that starting point backwards.
Right.
So that starting point is the truth. The no fucking bullshit truth that only you can tell yourself. So it's the starting point. The truth's the starting point.
And most people are surrounded by people that don't tell them the truth.
No.
Because it's too painful.
It is. Especially nowadays in this society, we like to surround ourselves. It makes us feel so good. Those people who say, it's okay. It's okay. It's not okay. It isn't okay, man. And I get it. Society's changing. And we love to feel wanted and loved. Trust me. That's all important. It is. But you have to have the truth from people. Hey, you're not working your butt off hard enough. You're not trying hard enough. We all think we're trying hard, but what are you gauging that off of? Are you gauging off of, like, I talked to this one kid the other day, college is kicking my ass. I said, what are you gauging that off of? I go, are you trying? He goes, yeah, I'm trying my ass off. I'm studying hard. I go, what are you gauging trying hard off of? Well, in high school, I didn't have to try at all. And I made great grades. In college, I'm trying hard. You're trying hard compared to what you did in high school, which was it came easy to you. So your reality is something that you created off of something easy. So you trying hard is 2 hours of studying. I'm going to tell you a difference in trying hard and trying hard. Trying hard is something in your mind just doesn't stop. We know 2 hours isn't enough. So it's all about, you know, reality and what you're basing things off of.
And most people quit at 40%.
Yes.
That's one of your most famous lines.
Yes.
I was hearing that years ago coming from you. And so when we're saying I'm trying hard, when you look in that accountability mirror, you need to look right in your eyes and say, who am I fucking bullshitting, right?
Right.
Because most likely you're at 40% or less.
Right. Much less.
Much less.
Because even though the 40% rule came up years later, when I was 297 pounds and I was fat as hell trying to be a Navy SEAL, the scariest thing in the world to me, even to this day, was that that could have been the rest of my life. I thought then I was trying hard. That's the scariest thing in the world. I thought then 297 pound working for Ecolab, spraying for cockroaches, making $1,000 a month. I thought that was me at my 100% potential. Come to find out, a few years later, I wasn't anywhere near that. 106 pounds less, graduate Navy SEAL training, went on to do all these other things. Looking back on that, that was me trying hard. That's why people gotta understand, what is in us, we have no idea until we start trying hard. And I mean really trying hard, where you're obsessed with, hey, this is my new norm. My new norm is that, wow, this isn't always fun. It's not always meant to be fun. And that's when you know you're trying hard.
Is that, and so people listening to us that maybe are at 20% or 30%, how do they shatter that myth that they've been telling themselves, you know, about, yeah, I'm going hard, I'm going max, and yet they're not seeing the results. Like, how do they actually shake themselves out of that? Because There's a great quote, I think it's by this guy named Richard Feynman, who says, the first principle is that you must not fool yourself, and you're the easiest person to fool. Mm-hmm. So we construct these crazy Disneyland realities in our brain, right? And then feed it back to ourselves. How do you shatter that?
Well, your first thing, like, you're fighting, we all have two people. We all have two people. And I'm not saying you're crazy. We have the easy voice, which is that 20% telling yourself that I'm easy at 90% of my full potential, maybe 100% at that 20%. That's that voice that we all love. That's that very comfortable voice, that's that mommy holding you saying, it's gonna be okay. Doesn't care how good you are, just loves you. Just loves you no matter how messed up you are in life. That's where you wanna be at. So that's that one voice. This other voice that we walk very far away from is a voice saying, hey man, you ain't doing shit. So we try to get this voice out of our head completely. And we live over here in this land. So what you have to do first is turn up this voice over here. The voice saying things to you that aren't nice. That it's in our head saying, you know what, man? Dude, you're not doing shit. You're not amount. I mean, and it's not putting yourself down. People take this the wrong way in this new society. I'm not saying to put yourself down. I'm saying listen to the truth. And the truth isn't in the 20%. The truth is in this other part of your brain saying, look, man, you're wasting a bunch of percentage here. We have 80 more percent that we're not tapping into, because in this other 80% is suffering, pain, failure, self-doubt, darkness, and then a whole bunch of light. But to get to this light, you got to go through all of this shit. So a lot of us know that. We know.
We do know deep down.
Yeah, I can get over here, but over here, man, this is much better, because I got to go through this journey that is not fun. This from 20 to 100%, this shit in between is not fun. So we decide to live over here. So everybody goes, how do you do that? You know exactly how to do that. You know exactly, it's not a magic trick. There's nothing I talk about in that book that's a magic trick. It's all back down to a very primitive mindset of we just have to do. It's like breathing. Breathing becomes normal. Like, we don't even know that we're doing it. That's how you have to live your life. When that alarm clock goes off at 4 or 5 in the morning, your mind says no. You just say, it's just what we do. It's what we do now. Because to get to where you want to go, the amount of pain involved, I'm not saying physical, I'm not saying you got to break yourself off. The amount of mental pain of how many times you're going to have to do something that you don't want to do to get to where you want to go. There's going to be more times you do something that you don't want to do than you are going to want to do it. And that's your new norm. That's your new norm. So then it's like breathing. And then once you do this over and over and over again, it becomes like breathing. I don't want to live this lifestyle, but to get to the other side of this, I have to. So if you really want it, you realize what trying is and what trying is not. So...
And is that all about just discomfort, the discomfort zone that you talk about, callousing the brain? Mm-hmm. Is it about anything that makes you uncomfortable, or are some things more effective than others?
Anything, basically. It's about doing those things that you don't want to do. And once again, I have to say it very loud and clear. I'm not about being a masochist. But what I found when I was 297 pounds, so I'm not a guy that read a book and said, oh, they're the answers. The book... Whoever buys this book, or if you don't, I could care less. All this came from here. It came from me putting myself on the hot seat and then saying, okay, wow. Okay, 297, this is where my mind was at. To get to 187, this is where my mind went to go through 3 hell weeks, to run 205 miles, to do 4,030 pull-ups. And I'm a natural born fat guy. Even though I was born 175, I gained 125 pounds. I was lazy. That's who I am. I'm a guy that likes to sit back, watch TV, and eat pizza.
Like everybody.
So I want to tell you right
now.
That's the mama voice.
Here, put your feet up. I'm giving you some cookies milk. Take it easy, right?
That's right. And for a guy that never had that, like me, I love my mom, but she was working. All I crave is that mama voice. Please love David. Love David. That voice got me to 297 pounds.
She used to cook for you too.
She used to cook for me. Matter of fact, in the book, I talk about it. When I got out of the military and I started gaining this weight a lot, my standard breakfast was 8 cinnamon rolls, you know, like basically, I think 6 to 8 scrambled eggs, you know, 1/2 pound of bacon, Fruity Pebbles, Lucky Charms, whatever it may be. That was my standard breakfast. So
that was your way of getting away from the pain in your brain. That was your vice.
That was my vice.
And for some people, it's alcohol or drugs or sex or shopping. For you, it was food.
It was food and also being comfortable. Whatever I wanted, I did. And that's where I started seeing myself get further and further away from my true self. And your true self is found, honestly, in that very uncomfortable zone.
But you couldn't take it anymore. You had an epiphany where you just said, I don't want to be this guy anymore. Do you ever think that if it hadn't been that morning and that Navy SEAL thing hadn't been on the Discovery Channel when you got home from work, that that might have not flipped the switch and you'd be out there 350-pound David Goggins right now?
The thing about it was, it wasn't like it was an epiphany. I had this haunting voice in the back of my head. A lot of us have it.
Yeah.
We just ignore it. And it was there for years. So I knew in the back of my mind that I could pull off this whatever. Whatever I wanted, I knew I could.
You knew you could.
I knew that, but I was afraid of the work. Because I wasn't gifted with brains. I wasn't gifted with God-given talent as far as like athleticism. So I knew to get to where I had to go, to be on the same playing field as these men, to even try out for this program, I knew the work was going to be something that I didn't want to even attack. So I was just putting it off.
But yet you did it.
Because it haunted me.
Okay.
The voice in my head said, you know what, man? You're going to die never even trying to reach your full potential. And how's that going to feel? So I'm going to live even while I'm dead. I'm going to be, because I believe in a higher power, whatever it may be. I don't know what it is. I believe that your mind lives forever. Some spirit, something lives forever. I'm going to be haunted by the mere fact that I literally just, that's what I was.
You wasted that life.
That's what I was, man.
And you look back and here lies David Goggins, a punk.
That's it.
Right.
And I get to live. So whatever heaven or hell is, you're in hell the rest of your life. The rest of your life. And if there is a God, which I hope to God there is, knowing what I put myself through now, whatever memories I have, if there's any at all, I'll be a happy man. But I knew that I was going to pay for this while I was living or while I was dead. I was going to pay for this. Because basically, to me, it was a huge sin. I'm basically just going to sit here and just be a comfortable man and not even try.
Wasting your life is a sin, right?
It's a sin.
It is.
I'm not even going to try.
You said that the one thing that always bothered you was when you died, someday, if you meet your maker, that he would pull out a list and say, no, you were supposed to be this badass motherfucker.
Right.
And instead, you turned into this cockroach-slinging, you know, Fruity Pebble-eating motherfucker.
Yeah, so...
And like you said, you almost have to live with that for eternity somehow.
Right. So how I talk about it is basically, I visualize a lot. And so I visualize...
You always have?
Always have. Well, okay. Always have, but a lot of it was very disgusting.
Okay.
It was like, woe is me.
Okay.
Woe is me.
Which is worse.
Yes.
Just as bad.
Yes.
Just as powerful.
But I developed a reality that wasn't real. That's the thing we always do. We can have a great life, but we always build this reality around the one thing we don't have. So therefore, our great life, we don't even see it. We see the one piece of clothing we weren't able to get versus the amazing things we have. So we focus on that. I was the king of focusing on the one bad thing in my life. The one bad person called me nigger. Everything bad, I focused on that. But over here was a beautiful reality of my life. Even though I came from nothing, where I could have taken my mind for the possibilities of where I can go if I work harder. That was all over here, but I lived in the filth over here. So basically, what I started doing was, when I was 297, I thought about, my God, man, like, this could be my life. And I thought, okay, what does heaven look like? I don't know. No one does, I imagine. So I was like, okay, I imagine that there's a big long line and you got judgment and you're God. Let's say you're God and I'm just David Goggins. Big long line and you're talking to Jane Doe. Jane Doe goes by and behind you is a big whiteboard. And the whiteboard has like just a piece of paper and you pull it down. The next person in line is David Goggins. And on this board, it has all this stuff on it, but I can't see because I'm too far back in line. So I come up, I sit down now, you're talking to me. David, congratulations, you made it to heaven. How you feel? And right now I'm 300-pound man. Ecolab guy, I'm 71 years old. This is what I'm thinking at 24 years old, okay? I'm dead, I'm in heaven, you're God. You pull the paper down, it says David Goggins. I'm reading it and I'm looking at it. And it has my name, but on this paper, it says everything about you. Everything, because God knows all. And I'm looking at it and I'm seeing 185 pounds, Navy SEAL, changed people's lives, all these amazing things. Public speaker, blah, 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 motivational, all the best-selling book. I look at God, I say, God, you, the name is right, but what's on here is not me. He goes, it should have been you. This was the life that you were supposed to live, but you didn't try. So this is the life that you have. So what I think to myself is, are you in heaven? Am I talking to God or am I talking to the devil? Because I'm in hell now to see that that was supposed to be my life, but because I didn't try hard enough, because I didn't put forth every single bit of an ounce of pressure in my body into being better, they end up being a 300-pound guy that made $1,000 a month, and I was fine there. That was okay. So that's how my mind works. It works that way to see, where is this going to take me? What's the possibility? So
we're all in a battle with our own brains. That's all life. That's all life is.
It's the most powerful thing in the world, is your own brain. It could work for you or against you.
And when did you start to realize that the visualization could work for you? And as opposed to focusing on all those bad things that happened, all the things you didn't have, the people that called you names, all the stuff in Brazil, Indiana, and you started thinking, wait a second, I just visualized this, and now I can take it to the next level, because the visualization got you through the SEAL training, I think.
It did, and I was able to visualize the end. So when I was 297, and I was all fat and out of shape, and I couldn't run a quarter mile, and I was drinking milkshakes and eating boxes of donuts, I visualized, man, how would it feel? So after I watched that show on Discovery Channel, for a brief moment, there was 22 guys that graduated. I watched this segment on TV about these guys going through Navy SEAL training. And I couldn't even, I wasn't a great swimmer, I was afraid of the water, all this crap, man. And I saw these guys just quitting. But at the very end, it says 22 guys, this command officer's up there, and he gives this great speech. I was like, man, I wonder. So I started visualizing me being the 23rd guy in these dress whites, sitting there with these guys, getting that Navy SEAL, you know, graduating this Navy SEAL training. I was like, God. So I put myself there. I was like, man, that's an amazing feeling. I put myself there at 297, not even able to do anything that these great men were doing. I said, man, if I could feel that, that would change my life. If I could just feel that one, it lasts for 1 second. You get that certificate, you walk across the stage, and what's next? But I didn't know that then. My mind wasn't, I thought I'd live in that moment forever. So I said, wow, man, if I could just feel like them,
And what was that feeling you wanted so bad? Respect, accomplishment?
No, victory. I wanted to win. Not like beat somebody else. It wasn't about that. I just wanted to go the distance. Everything in my life, when something got hard, I quit. If it was reading, that's where, you know, I wasn't great at reading. I wasn't great at writing, so I just quit. I couldn't catch on as fast as you. I had to work harder than you, so I quit. You know, I wasn't great at things, so I quit. You know, I'm not good at this. Like, man, if I could just go that distance, that extra mile, to just go, just to finish. I want to finish. I want to feel victory. And victory for me wasn't winning. It was just finishing. So I said, you know what? If I could feel like these guys feel, it would change my life. But what I realized, the best feeling I had was when I was by myself trying to lose this weight. I had to lose it in literally less than 3 months. 106 pounds in less than 3 months. And literally, I started feeling victory just by putting myself in the battle. It wasn't about going to Navy SEAL training. It wasn't about being the 23rd guy in that chair. I started realizing, man, just by going to war with myself every day and putting these challenges and these goals and these obstacles, these insurmountable obstacles. So it wasn't about losing 106 pounds. Me losing 5 pounds was an accomplishment. Right. Me losing 10 pounds and then 50 pounds. And then the more I did this, the more I gained confidence. And then the more I gained confidence, the more I realized, fuck these Navy SEALs, man. These guys can't do what I'm doing right now. I had no coach, had no trainer, had no money. I didn't know how to lose weight. I had no knowledge of what I was doing. I was just working. I was just sacrificing. And then through that, all these different tools started coming up. But I would have never found these tools if I didn't put myself in a very uncomfortable place. We all look for toughness. We all want it. But we look for it in a comfortable environment. You will not find toughness in a comfortable environment. Those of you who are listening to this, whoever hear this, you will not find it. I was trying to look for it everywhere. The only way you find it is to drown yourself in a position where you're just out of sorts, where you can't swim and you're drowning. Where you're drowning. You're drowning in life. But you say, you know what, man? Fuck that. I'm going to figure out how to fucking backstroke or fucking something. I'm going to figure out how to. And then through figuring out all these tools, your mind starts to, when you quit, your mind does this. Because you're out. Once you say, I'm not going to quit, this is the 40%. When you quit, your mind says, we're done. So it doesn't expand. There's no expansion when you quit. When you say, fuck you, this sucks. I'm drowning. I'm miserable. I'm suffering. I'm broken. But I'm not going anywhere. What happens to your mind is it does this. It says, fuck, he's not leaving. So we got to expand. We got to grow. We got to figure this fucking thing out. So then these compartments in your brain start to have, they have to work. They have to work. And then you start to engage parts of your mind that you never engaged before. But you can't engage it by sitting back in these nice chairs, drinking this nice water, talking to you, talking about what I want to do. That's where the 40% thing comes in. It comes in when you're in suffer mode and you say, I'm not going to quit. You're forcing your brain now to operate on a level it's not used to. But then it becomes used to it.
Because it's telling you the whole time not to go there. Mm-hmm. It's structuring an entire narrative about your whole future life to make sure you never go there.
That's right.
But when you force it physically, it has to expand and adapt for pure survival reasons.
It has to. And your brain is the most powerful weapon. I talk about that in one of these chapters. Your brain is the most powerful weapon in the world. Once you put away your phones and your computers and all that shit we have nowadays, yeah, that's great. We're up to date. But your brain is the only thing you have when you're going through depression, when you're going through hard times, you're going through death, real life shit. You can't Google that shit, man. You're alone. You're alone. You may have a shrink you're going to. You may have a best friend you're going to. But there's 24 hours in the day where you're alone in this brain. And your brain is talking to you in all kinds of ways. And it wants to control you and pull you in these different pockets. If you can't control your own brain and your brain controls you, you're fucked. You got to tell your brain where you want to go and how you want to go and how you want to get there. You got to control it. If not, it's over. It's over.
And all of that you learned from your own brain. You didn't Google this shit.
No.
You didn't buy books.
It didn't exist. This shit didn't exist. I couldn't even fucking spell Google back then. This shit didn't exist, man. What existed for me was, okay, man, how am I gonna fucking make this work? And all I knew back then was hard work. The only way anything gets accomplished, that's all I heard back in those days. You gotta work hard. You gotta work hard. I'm not getting how to, I can't get this paragraph. I can't remember what the fuck's in this paragraph to pass this test to get in the military. Read again. Still not getting it. Read again. But if you're not getting it, write it out. And that's how I started learning. Okay, well, I gotta write out every fucking thing I do. And then write it out again. And write it out again. And guess what happened? I got it. I can't swim. I'm negative buoyant. Go back again. I can't swim. Go back again. Go back again. I got it. I realize if I keep going back and going back and going back until the shit just becomes, your mind will say, fuck, okay, we're gonna figure it out.
It'll find a way.
Because he is not going to stop. It's not like, I'm gonna try one more time. No, it's just like, alarm clock goes off, boop, we're going back. I can't read right, we're going back. I gave myself no way out, and my mind realized that. They said, okay, we're gonna adapt and overcome now.
So you have to teach your mind, this is the new normal,
this
and
is
you
the
better
new
get with the fucking program.
That's right.
And as soon as it realizes that you're serious, then it adapts.
I'm not playing a game.
Right, but if it thinks you're playing a game, it knows,
it
won't adapt.
Like a lot of people say, like when I say trying hard, your mind knows, man. It knows this guy's bullshitting me, man. This guy's lying. There's no truth behind it. When I was in Navy SEAL training, people go, how were you there for 18 months? The program was only 6 months long. You were in 3 hell weeks in 1 year. No one's ever done that. How did you do that? I talk about the new norm. When I lived in a $7 a month place when I was growing up for a short period of time, I loved it. I didn't know any different. That was my norm. Once we moved out of that place, we moved to a $236 a month place, I was like, shit, I never want to go back to that little piece of shit. But if you go back to that $7 a month place and you realize this is where I live, this is all I got, your mind says, Roger that, this is home. So when I was going through Navy SEAL training for 18 months and going back through all the hard parts over and over again, I told myself after the first time, I knew it was gonna be a long journey there. My body was breaking down. It was just how it was going on. I said, you know what, this is my new norm. So my mind said, it's like going to work. Like you go to work, you put your suit and tie on, I go into suffering every day. Every day, suffering, being broken, duct taping my feet up, stress fractures, shin splints, being broken. This is my new norm. And your mind says, if we're not broken, this ain't normal. We gotta be broken. So then your mind starts to get tougher and tougher and more callous. People go, how did you run on broken feet? Broken shins. My mind knew this is how we operate. We're in Navy SEAL training. This is what we are. I became hell. And that became my new norm. I gave myself no way out. There was nothing outside these walls of hell. Nothing. I love God, but for a short period of time, I became the devil because that was hell. I became the boss, the owner, the CEO of Navy SEAL training. That was my mindset. And that's how you get through things. You put yourself, you immerse yourself in wherever it is, and you become that. You become that and give yourself no way out.
What's that like in the moment? Is it hell, or do you get some kind of a weird neutral point where you're just in the moment being this guy, breathing and feeling the pain? What is that like?
The scariest thing in the world about that, and I have to always tell you this, man, because people hear my story and think this guy is sadistic. I realize how the brain works. I figured out how the brain works. I'm a scared kid, and that's what gives me so much power. I had no foundation, and I built this off of just researching the mind. The feeling you get is basically invincibility. You realize that you can't do it all the time. When you need to do it, I know I can go to a place that I can live in. And when you know that you can run on broken legs and you can do certain things that a lot of people can do, but they're not willing to do, this power, this sympathetic nervous system of fight or flight, and you're fighting. It gives you this charge of energy of when you're sitting there at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and you're duct taping your feet up because they're broken, and you're doing it by yourself, and you're going through arguably one of the hardest training in the world. And these guys, most of them are healthy, and you're going through it broken, and you are at a disadvantage, but you're still there. You can feed into that and tap into that for a lot of power. But if you look at it, well, I'm broken, man. Like, I'm not gonna make it. But if you look at it as, man, I'm broken and I'm still here. And I'm fighting and I'm gonna find a way to get through this because I have no other place to go. It gives you a lot of power.
And it's not rage. You were pretty clear at saying you can't get through that with anger.
No.
Anger won't get you very far.
I thought it would. But what happens is, not just in SEAL training, but in life in general, when things start to suck really, really bad, my brain and a lot of people's brain, they don't go to the people that called you nigger or your dad beating you up. Your brain says, we gotta get the fuck out of here. This is miserable. So anger goes away a lot of times when you're suffering because your brain just says, we gotta run, right. We gotta go. So that anger is not popping up saying, oh, I'm gonna show them. I'm gonna show those people. No, there has to be a much deeper. When I say deeper, it has to be down to mineral soil. It has to be down to that nice mineral soil where nothing can burn. You can't burn dirt. So it has to be down that low that literally is something in you that's at the core of your soul. But you don't find it unless you spend a lot of time with what you want to be in life. I can't give that to you.
Right.
You can't give it to somebody. When you find your true passion in life, and my passion for me when like, oh, I want to be, I don't give a fuck about Navy SEALs, Army, I don't give a shit. I want to serve my country. I want to be someone that I'm proud of.
You're proud of. That's all that matters.
I'm proud
for you.
Of.
Nobody else matters,
no,
right?
No, give a shit. I don't give a shit that I want to look at myself in the mirror because I was so disappointed. That accountability mirror I talk about, I was so disappointed in what I saw every fucking day. I wanted everybody to love David Goggins. And a lot of people did. I didn't love myself. But I knew a lot of us want to find peace first. So people say, man, you always talk about this suffering and pain and shit. I'm at peace right now because I went through that.
Right.
You don't find peace first. If you do, Merry Christmas. More power to you. More power to you. I found peace on the opposite end of finding myself. And no one really finds themselves without going through trials, tribulations, suffering, accountability. And accountability is suffering. Being accountable every fucking day for doing right for yourself, for the people next to you, it's miserable. It's hard.
That is suffering
it's
in
miserable.
Disguise, right? Suffering.
It's miserable. So, you know, even the smallest details. So that's where it comes.
Once you start finding that you're excelling and you're visualizing this future and you're having this success, you use this phrase called uncommon amongst uncommon, mm-hmm. to where you're like, as you said earlier, fuck these Navy SEALs. They're not these robots, these supermen I thought they were.
Right.
Maybe I can be better. Maybe I can do more. Tell me about that, because that's a transition.
It is a transition. So when you come from where I came from, there's a lot of power. So the power comes from when you think that, my God, everybody's above you. And then you put, for instance, I talk about the Navy SEALs in my book. I put every Navy SEAL on a pedestal.
It's easy to do.
It's easy to do. You read the books about them. You see movies about them. Superhuman. But what happens is once you drop your own limitations and you... So one thing we do bad in life is we put all these people above you. Never put anybody above you, man. Make it an even playing field. But you can't make it an even playing field if you're not working your fucking ass off. I'm not saying not to respect people. You gotta respect people. But if you're playing tennis, right now there's tennis going on here in Queens. If you're playing tennis and you're playing Roger Federer, even Roger Federer is not here right now, but say you're playing Roger, best ever, arguably best ever. But I'm fucking good at tennis. But Roger's the best ever. That's in my fucking head. And we're playing a five-set match, Grand Slam. Before Roger serves the ball, the first serve of the game, first serve, set one, game one, first serve. In your mind, you're thinking, man, that's the best fucking person in the world to serve. This is how I thought about Navy SEALs. So what happens is, two sets fly by. Roger fucking smokes you, 6-0, 6-0. Or 6-0, 6-1. You're like, wow, man. I can play with this motherfucker. But by the time you realize you can play with Roger Federer,
it's too late.
It's too late. So that's what I mean by that. Don't go into any competition of life, physical, mental, emotional, whatever it may be, too late. You got to try so hard. Know that you worked hard, hard as fuck, to be on an even playing field. So I did that. So once I did that, your eyes open up. So now you don't see Roger Federer as Roger Federer. You see him as a fucking tennis player. So now you're competing on the first serve. So you give yourself a chance to win. So when I went to Navy SEAL training after my first hell week, second hell week, third hell week, I said, man, I can compete with these guys. Not only compete with them, I'm gonna go another level. Because I started seeing, I put these guys and a lot of people on a pedestal. But it also hurt me. It hurt me too, because when you put people on a pedestal, you expect people to be at a certain level. So I was living off of, wow, all these mythologies of what a special forces guy is. You get up, you don't sleep, you run on broken legs, you know, it's like, you know, I really fed into all that shit, man. So it actually helped make me who I am. But I started looking around, seeing, man, these are really a lot of my normal fucking guys. And that disappointed me, but it shouldn't have. My expectations were of myself. I was grouping everybody. So that's where I realized being uncommon amongst uncommon, it's really about yourself. It's you against yourself. It's not you against them. But it sounds like that, because really, these guys are uncommon. Once you become a Navy SEAL or whatever you become, a big CEO, you're now common again. So everybody looks at these guys as uncommon. But once you become one, we're all guys again. We're all in the same group of guys. We're all in the same fraternity. So how do you separate yourself from the best? You're going to piss some people off when you do that. Because they all think, whoever CEOs, special operators, fucking athletes, they all think they're the fucking best. They're all alphas, females, males, all alphas. So once you get in these groups and you're like, you know what? I don't want to be like you anymore.
You want to be better.
I want to be better than you.
You want to push yourself even harder.
I want to put all this shit to fucking shame. Not to put you down, but there's another level, man.
You want to keep evolving.
I want to keep evolving.
Right.
There's more to this.
And that's why when you describe yourself to people, SEAL is down on the list. I mean, you talk about all these other things you've done. And that's why you kept it going with these races,
mm-hmm.
with the 100-mile race in San Diego. I'm from San Diego.
Right.
And listening to that story, it was right by the bay, I think you did it, right? And the craziest thing about the book is you go for this 100-mile race, no training, right? Mileplex and Ritz crackers. I heard this story about 16 times listening to all your stuff. But you said—
Hospitality point.
Hospitality point. I think it was mile 79 or something?
70.
70. You said that's when you had one of the most powerful moments of your life. It wasn't three hell weeks.
Nope.
It was running a 1 mile track over and over again in one of the most beautiful climates in the world, San Diego, California. And you found your what?
That's when I knew, even through my three hell weeks and through Ranger School. I mean, I'd gone through all these things already. And I endured so much pain already. I thought, man, I reached the pinnacle. It was on a 1 mile track.
Why were you doing this? Because you were trying to be uncommon amongst uncommon.
I was trying to raise money for Special Operations Warrior Foundation. Right. It's a foundation that gives 100% tuition to special operators' kids So if your dad died, he was a special operator, your kid goes to school full tuition. Great foundation. So I found a foundation. I was like, I gotta find a way to, you know, to raise money. So I found this race called Badwater 135. I didn't know anything about ultra running, knew nothing about it. Call the race director up, it's all in the book. I even had the emails in the book from me and Chris Kostman going back and forth. And he basically says, you have to qualify for my race. I was like 200 and some odd pounds. I was a bodybuilder now, wasn't a big runner. I literally did 20 minutes on the elliptical trainer every Sunday. That's it. That was my cardio. I lifted weights, and that's what I did. So I call him up on a Wednesday, and he says, you know, basically to qualify for the Badwater.
Which is 135
miles. 135 miles
through
Death
the desert,
Valley.
Through Death,
yes,
Valley.
In the summertime. I thought it was a stage race where you ran like 5 or 6 days, because I didn't know that was humanly possible. So I called him on the Wednesday. He said, you got to qualify. There's only two more races I could do to qualify for the Badwater before the deadline ended. One was in San Diego Saturday. So Wednesday to Saturday, what, 3.5 days, you know, it's not a lot of time. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'm going to go try to do this race. So I go out here, have a blue lawn chair, Ritz crackers and Mileplex, and I'm going to see my crew person every mile. And I get to mile 50. I literally detail it perfectly in the book. But at mile 70, I'm broken. I didn't train for it at all. Zero training for this race. But this is when I start realizing, man, my God, man, this is when I realize we are not even trying. Because at mile 70, I was in the worst pain of my entire life. I was broken. I thought my third hell week, I was really bad off. No, there's nothing I can ever imagine being worse than this race. And it was the easiest 100 mile race I've ever done in my life, ever. But I wasn't prepared. And so at mile 70, you know, I'm literally in this chair and I'm pissing blood. I'm crapping up my back. I'm in the worst state of my life. And I'm like, I need to quit. I need to quit. But what I did though was through my life, I realized that your mind wants to quit. It's called the 1 second decision. I call it the 1 second decision when your mind is spazzing out. And it's like, we gotta get the fuck out of here. We're miserable, let's go home. And at mile 70, I was there. But I didn't get there till I sat down. It's like, oh my God, my blood pressure dropped. I was dizzy, lightheaded, and the pain just came over me. Cause my body thought I was done, in my mind. So I sat there and said, you know what, I might quit. I knew I wasn't, but what that might quit did was it kind of gave my mind all that anxiety. And let it go. Cause my mind said, oh, he's gonna quit. So we're gonna sit here for a while and just sit here. We're done. So I literally start to get food, hydrate up, and I'm dizzy and I can't stand up. So now, after a while, I stand up. And I say, you know what? I'm gonna quit. But once again, I knew I wasn't. There's a trick to the mind.
So you're fucking with your own mind.
That's right.
Give advanced your mind, level. This is black belt
that's
shit.
That's right. Give your mind a little bit of space. Because right. If it knows I have 30 more fucking miles to go and I'm in the worst shape of my fucking life, my mind's going to say, no way. No way, dude. So you got to give it some space. Say, you know what? If I can stand up and walk 1 mile, this would be the biggest achievement of my life because I'm death. Right now, I'm death. If I can get up and walk 1 mile, that'd be the best day of my life. I walked 1 mile. And I won't go too deep into it all. I got 2 miles. Maybe I'll try 3. I did this to mile 81. And at mile 81, the person crew me was like, hey, you know what? Basically, I knew I wasn't going to make the time because I was crawling around that track. Crawling. And this is the eureka moment. This is it. Out of my whole life, this is the one time, this is when I realized that we are fucking way, way, way cutting ourselves short. Worst shape of my life, thought I was gonna die. Never felt this kind of pain before in my life, ever, never again. And my 81, when I knew I wasn't gonna make the time, I ran. the next, I ran 20 miles. I did 101 miles. I was averaging like 10, 1030s. Coming from death, being able to barely walk, now I'm running 10 to 1030s for the next 20 miles. When I got done with that, I sat back down in that chair that was now my porta potty, and it was my ex-wife. She actually backed the car up on this grassy knoll where I was kind of, you know, camped up at for 19 hours and 6 minutes. I ran 101 miles, ran, walked 101 miles. I got home. I detail it well in the book. I won't go through it well. It was a horrible situation. I was in the worst shape of my life, passing out, shitting on myself, peeing blood. I got in the tub. I had this poncho liner on because in San Diego in November, it's chilly. So I'm freezing. She puts the water on me and I'm peeing what looks like dirt. It's just dark, dark, dark. It's like dirt coming out of me. And we have a discussion and she calls my mom up. My mom has a doctor friend. The doctor friend says, you got to get him to the hospital. His kidneys are shutting down. This is going on. This is going on. He, you know, he could die. And this is where the story gets kind of crazy. It was the best and worst feeling I had in my life. I had put myself in a situation where I was, where I opened my mind to the fullest capacity to pull this off. And all the pain, I mean, it was live. The pain sensors were going to my body. I'm in this tub in the fetal position. The water's coming down on me. And I'm just sitting there, just jackhammering. Hot water hit me. I'm jackhammering, peeing Coca-Cola out of me. I'm like, God, dog, I'm just... And she goes, we gotta get you to the hospital. It was the best feeling of my entire life. And everybody goes, how do you say that? I probably could have died. And I literally pushed myself to a place that very few human beings would ever be willing to go. And I got to examine myself. I call it the live autopsy, where we find out why someone died after they're dead. I got a chance in 19 hours and 6 minutes to put myself in the worst possible condition I could possibly be in and figure out how to get through it and get through it. And all this pain going through me was confirmation that I had just done something that I thought was humanly impossible. And I didn't want it to go away.
You're reveling in that moment thinking, man, look what I just did.
Look what the human mind can do.
Right.
And from that 19 hours and 6 minutes, I lived an entire lifetime. Entire lifetime. People live 100 years and never experience the highs, the lows, the journey I did, all of it. In 19 hours and 6 minutes, I lived 100 years. And I try hard to put it in the book, but no one will ever be able to really understand what that was about. And I was like, if I die here today, I'm fine with that. Cause I just literally pulled off something that I never thought was even humanly possible.
Did that evolve you to like the next level and make a lot of the other endurance stuff you did after that look differently? Did you look through it to a different lens? Were you able to hold on to that feeling and that knowledge?
The knowledge, yes, but it made a lot of things very different. That's where the uncommon came in.
Okay.
Once I got through with that race, November 2005, that's when I started really looking at people like, man, you're cutting yourself way fucking short, bro.
Right.
I start judging people like, man, I wish I could give you my brain. I can't tell you because you're going to then put a title on me of he's crazy. You're born gifted. You're born this. You have a higher pain tolerance than most people. You're going to put a title on me to give yourself a get out of jail free card. Because if you put a title on me as he's crazy or he's gifted, then you can say he's just a special human being.
Right.
So now you ain't got to try that fucking hard.
Right.
So if I give you my fucking brain, tell you where I come from, tell you how I figured all this shit out, and say, there you go.
Then I got to look at my life.
Then you got to look at your life. Then you got to say, fuck, this guy's not special at all. We all have that capability. But it takes going through that 20, that 20% to that 100% and all that shit in between to get to that light that you see at the end of that fucking tunnel. And sometimes that journey between 20 to 100% is so fucking dark in there. But you gotta stay in there long enough to where there's just a little bit of light coming through to where your depth perception, you start to get that depth perception. You're like, oh, okay, I got a little bit of illumination now. But if you don't stay in there longer than fucking an hour to 2 hours, that little bit of light going through that concrete fucking tunnel, you're never gonna have that little bit of light that you can now see in the dark, just enough to make out shadows. You quit too early. Therefore, you can't make out the light in that fucking tunnel. There's always light in the tunnel. There's always some crack. There's always some imperfection in every fucking tunnel. But it's dark at first. Your eyes got to get adjusted to that motherfucker, man. And until they get adjusted, we quit because it's too dark. It's scary in that motherfucker. So we get out. Stay in there long enough. Allow your eyes to find that one little bit of light in there. Focus on that light. And then you'll be able to fucking wake your way through the tunnel.
And that could be the most beautiful moment of your life. Or ever. The reason you are here to exist.
It's the reason why I was able to live the life I live today. I was able to continue living it.
Because that you went there.
That 19 hours, it wasn't Navy SEAL training. That would have been great if that's where it ended. But that 19 hours and 6 minutes gave me a whole nother reality.
How many people you think that have been on this planet had ever have an experience like that? We're talking 10 billion people. Like, how many you ever think got to feel like David Goggins felt, jackhammering in that tub, pissing Coca-Cola? I mean,
a lot of people have been there because, you know, whatever, but they haven't been in that situation for 30 miles.
Right.
To
get that clarity.
To get that, like literally, I had to go 70 miles first, be broken, be in the sewer, have nothing left, and say, okay, I'm gonna now go 31 more miles.
That's when the race starts.
That's when it started.
Right.
So okay. A lot of people have been broken down, but to say, I'm gonna go to start line of a 31 mile race with shit on my back, blood down me, depleted, completely dehydrated, no nothing. I'm gonna go to the start line of this motherfucker looking like that and see how it turns out. People don't show up to a race like that.
But if they did, they could see something more beautiful than they've ever known their whole life or for 100 years.
And the thing about it is though, don't take this and say, I need to go there to find this. It's all relative. And it's not always in the physical that we find this.
Although that can be good because
it can be good.
It's real. It's the truth.
It's very real.
It's the truth.
It might be that you're this, you know, that you don't feel like you can go to Harvard or Yale. Don't, you know, and you gotta study so much harder than everybody else. If they're studying 3 hours, you're studying 3 days. You can find it there at the end of that saying, my God, man, you have no idea. Because no one will ever know besides one person. It wouldn't even talk anymore. One person got a chance to really experience that with me, but no one really knows what I experienced but me. So that's what makes you powerful. There's no cheerleaders. There's no fucking crowds cheering you on. That's what makes you powerful, is when the only cheerleader is you by yourself. That's what forces you. It's not, come on, man, you can do this. And you got 20 people, or the Boston Marathon with 26.2 miles of people cheering you on, and you're bonking at mile 18. No, man, you alone on a 1 mile track, and that 1 mile track could be anything, and there's no one fucking there but you. And then you have to do a live autopsy and dissect, and those demons come out, man. We all got them. Whether you got a fucked up childhood, whether you're a bully, whether you think that you're stupid, whether your mom wasn't there, your dad wasn't there, whether you're gay, lesbian, whatever the fuck you're going through in your life, that judgment's there, everything becomes so real and clear, you're talking to yourself so negatively and you're fighting these fucking voices saying, why the fuck are you doing this? But if you get through it, on the other side of that thing, man, is a whole nother world that very few people know exist in your mind.
But it's there.
It's there.
It's there.
It's there.
Just trust that, that it's there. And put in that pain and work. And there's only one person that knows if you did it.
And that's right. And it's you.
And you. And you got that voice inside you. And it's going to come out sooner or later, right?
Right.
It can come out today or in 10 years or 50 years from now, but it will come out, right? Most of your life, it feels like you've been in a battle with yourself. Mm-hmm. But like the last 2 years, it feels like you are connecting with other people. And you're like giving something back to this like human species. And this is like a mission from you. But this is like, is this phase two of David Goggins? Because, you know, before up to then, it felt like I'm trying to figure out my shit. I'm trying to battle my own demons. I'm trying to be number one in my brain.
Right.
But like, you know, if you hear some of the things you're saying now, it's like, I want to show you. Read my book, You're the Hero, Not Me. Mm-hmm. If you watch your Instagram post, it's like, you know, what's your story? What are you doing today? What do you make of this?
You know what's funny, man? I'm not trying to do this.
It's happening through you.
I'm not trying to do this. Like, so people go, you know, I post once a week. I'm not trying to get more followers. I don't give a damn if you like my message or not. Literally, we all are teachers. And some people respond to different teachers. Like leadership. Everybody goes, man, how do you become a great leader? Everybody leads differently. Everybody follows different leaders. I happen to be one of millions of teachers. But every one of us are teachers. I'm a teacher. All I'm doing is I'm putting out the fucking damn, here's the information, man. This is what I know. Some people learn from David Goggins. Some people despise David Goggins. But I have people who are in my classroom. I'm just a teacher. Either you show up to fucking class or you don't. God happened to bless me and said, look, I'm going to put you on earth. I'm not going to teach you a lot. That's how you become a great teacher. You become a great teacher by being the student. And I was the student in a class of one. And I had a poopy pants blaming people mentality. But I learned. And once you learn by falling on your face, that's how you learn. You learn by trying to create a light bulb over and over and over again. And then you get knowledge. So now I'm a teacher. And some people say, wow, man, your story connects with me. So all I'm doing, it's not like I'm saying, oh, I want to come out here and have people fucking follow me and love me. All I'm doing is doing what God put me here or whatever put me here to do.
You're channeling some higher power.
That's it.
Somehow.
I'm a teacher. Because why? I don't give a shit.
Are you sometimes surprised? Like, what the fuck is happening to me? I'm turning into this guy and I'm leading these people? Or does it feel supernatural?
You know,
I know you're an introverted guy, so this doesn't come natural for you.
It doesn't come natural. Matter of fact, I hate this interview right now. Not because of you. I'm uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable because for several years growing up, I stuttered. So I'm nervous around people. I still battle these demons every day. They're still there, man. I'm still that guy that lived in a $7 a month place. Just because I'm not living there anymore, I'm scarred. Scars remind you that your past is real. It's real, man. Can't run away from it. It's a part of me. I carry that shit where I go. It doesn't define who I am, but it's a scar. All these things scarred me. But that's why people connect with me. We all have mental scars, physical scars. Our scars remind us that the past is so very fucking real. So I'm a teacher saying that it's okay, man. The scars are real, but you can still be a bad motherfucker. You can still be a very, very dangerous motherfucker.
What was the hardest part about going back down into the past and into those sewers and revisiting these old memories and trying to make sense of them and trying to remember what really happened as opposed to the version that happened? I mean, the abuse with your dad seemed pretty real.
Oh, you know? Real shit.
It was pretty real shit. But was that the hardest part, or did it trigger stuff into you physically and mentally where you were like, whoa, you know?
You know what you realize? You realize how much you try to block it out. you realize how much of your life you just shove under a rug and you just live on top of that rug until you pull that rug out and you fall into this fucking pile of shit. And then when you're in this pile of shit that we literally carry around with us all day long, but we just put it way back here, but we're carrying this big fucking rucksack, this big backpack of shit every day, but we think we're not.
Right.
We think we're not. We think, oh, we're good. I'm good. So when I had to go back in that shit, what was hard about it was trying to find power. Trying to find power in filth. Trying to take all this negative shit and say, all right, how the fuck am I going to use all this shit to propel me forward? That's the hardest part about it, because all you want to do is lay in it and just say, God, man, like, just let me die in this shit. So as you're going back to it, it almost makes you say, how the fuck did I get here? So when I went back to it, and I went back to it way before this book, because you have to go back to it before you go forward. You know, we all want to start now. I'm 44. I'm not going to go backwards. I want to go forwards. So no, that's not how it works. It's not how it works.
So you had been processing this for the last 10 years.
Years.
Yeah.
You can't speak about the way I do unless you process it. You go back a million times. You battle it. You overcome it. Even though it's gone, you got to go back in your mind and face it and overcome it. With my father, when I was 22, I believe I was, 22, 23, I had to go back and face him. Actually face him one-on-one. And that's really when I realized I had to go back to the, you know, like if your knee hurts. A lot of people focus on your knee. It may be your fucking, if it's your left knee, it might be your right hip. We don't ever focus on the hip, focus on the knee. So for me, I was focusing on all this surface shit. So when I went to the Air Force, I quit in training because I learned how to read, I learned how to write, I learned how to swim. But the second something hard came up, I went right back to where I always go. And I'm like, God, man, I thought I fixed all this shit. No, my left knee was hurting. And I worked on my left knee. It stopped hurting. But my fucking right hip was the fucking problem. So my right hip was my dad.
Right.
The crux of my problems wasn't anything to do with everything in life. It was to do with my father. Because that's where it started. It started there. The origin of the story, it started there. So I went back to the start point. And I had a face where all this happened, where the mindset started. The mindset of, you know, all this shit, being beat for no reason and feeling like you're nothing and feeling like you got to lie to gain friends. And, you know, my mind was developed, but it wasn't developing properly in that hell. You can't develop a mind in the hell I lived in. So what happened was people blamed me back in the day. My God, you lied about this and you did that. Let me put your fucking ass in that shit. Go. Be born in that shit, man. Let me see how you come out. Let me see how secure in your foundation you are when you get beat for just fucking doing nothing because he's drunk and he's mad at you. So you learn to survive, but surviving doesn't make you win. Surviving makes you a fucking cockroach. It makes you just do that, survive. It makes you lie. How can I get through this?
Right.
How can I get around this? Versus being a man is standing up for what you believe in. You're a coward. So you lie and you manipulate. But that's what those foundations, a lot of people are beat mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. So it makes you a coward. But then people blame you for how you act when you're 30 fucking years old. They don't know where you come from. They don't know the hell you had to endure while your mind is the way it is now. So you have to go back and fix that shit. You got to go back to where the shit came from. And I can fix it now. You got to go back and fix it. So when I went back there, I realized this fucking guy, I had to look at my dad and forgive him without saying sorry. No one said sorry. I had to go back and say, why were you so fucking nuts? And realize, oh, you never went back.
Right.
You never fucking went back. And whatever fucked you up while you beat the shit out of my mom, me, and my brother, You never went back, sir. You took all that shit out on us. And therefore, that's how the generational shit goes on. My dad was an alcoholic. My dad was a druggie. I'm a druggie. That's how that shit goes on. No one stops it. I stopped it. So that's what that caused me to do.
You forgave him in your own mind.
In my own mind. He died a few years back. I didn't go to the funeral, but I don't hate him. I had to let it go. It was over. That part of my life is over. I don't hate you. You're my father. I respect you for that. But I also know why you were the way you were. You have to understand the demon before you can fix it, man.
Now, what about the crazy observation? I'm sure you've seen, you heard this before, is that David Goggins doesn't exist without that childhood.
It's a true story. It's a true story. I had to go through all of that shit. But guess what? Like I said, something put me down here to go through that hill, to see the limitations of the human mind. I believe that I was here to do that. To come literally, no one taught me anything, man. To say, all right, man, what are we capable of? I had to be that guinea pig. And now, because I was that guinea pig, other people are learning from me, not having to go through everything I went through.
Right.
But now I have the answers to a lot of these, for my students, people who are listening to me, I have answers for you. Some people really understand how I think, the very primitive way in how I think. Some people, this is like, hey man, you got problems, you have issues. I got it. You need another teacher. But a lot of people say, no, I get it, man. But the people who get it, a lot of people either want to be better, come from a very dark place, come from a place where they're fucking hiding from something, and they don't want to be exposed. Those are the people who understand, can't hurt me. The book can't hurt me. Those people are saying, no, man, fuck this, man. It's time to be exposed. Because the only way you can go ahead and live is you got to say fuck you to everybody. Fuck you. I don't care how you judge me. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you I'm fucked up. I'm going to tell you I'm a liar. I'm going to tell you I'm a drunk. I'm going to tell you I'm this, I'm that, whatever the fuck you may be. But guess what? Look at me fucking next year. But you got to come out with that shit. You got to come out with it. You got to be real with yourself.
Be true and be vulnerable. And let it, put it all out there.
That's your start line.
That's your start line.
That's your start line.
that's 70 miles in for a lot of people.
And that's the thing about it, man. To get to the fucking start line is a journey. So some people, you know how sometimes you're in this fucking big long marathon, let's say New York City, some people say, man, it took me an hour to get to the start line. It may take you 4 years to get to that motherfucker in real life. Just to get to the start line. And people don't want to do that. I get it. It took me fucking 25 years, 26 years to get to the start line.
What's been the biggest moment since putting this book out there? What's been the thing that's just been like, oh, wow, never saw that coming, or I never thought I'd hear that from someone? Or
The emails I get from people, the thousands upon thousands of emails of me changing people's lives. So we sold a million copies in 7 months.
And self-published.
Self-published.
You did it your way. People were throwing you hundreds of thousands of dollars in checks.
Yes.
And you said, no, I'm doing this David Goggins
style. I'm doing
it
my way.
Why?
Because I wanted to be authentic. I wanted to be real and true to myself. So how I did the audiobook, which has never been done before, and we sold over 650,000 audiobooks. It's the hottest audiobook out there right now.
Because it's fucking good.
It's crazy. So basically, it's like a podcast, radio show, audiobook, all in one. It keeps you very entertained. So I wanted to put myself in it. I didn't want anybody to own it. This is my life. No one did this but me. So I wanted to make sure that every fucking cuss word, every word in there was real and raw and true to how my life is. And the biggest awe moment for me was this kid that came from absolutely nothing. I sat behind Michelle Obama in her huge book. So my book came out with Michelle Obama's. And she sold like fucking, I think week one, like 3 million copies. You know, you can't beat that. I sat behind her on Amazon list number 2 for 12 weeks. And I'm just David Goggins from nothing, came from nothing. And it's just a story about real life, real connection with people. It's not some life about, look, man, I was blessed, I had some silver spoon. It's about, not like, you know how in a movie, it has this great ending. And I talk about this start line, the truth. Even though I made it, I went back to that fucking start line after I made it 100 more times. That's real life. Real life is you get to the start line, you think you see the finish line, and something happens, man. Life happens, and you go right back to the fucking start line again. You say, fuck. And sometimes you get pushed way back in that start line. So that's what the book's about, man. It's real fucking life. It's my life in the rawest form. But through that book, you see a whole bunch of takeaways, man. Takeaways. And I call it the indestructible toolbox. It's all through there. So
taking souls, yep. Cookie jar.
Cookie jar, taking souls, you know, the accountability mirror, uncommon amongst uncommon. We talk about the most powerful weapons, your mind, about how to literally... Everybody says they have no fucking time. You have no time because you haven't really saw how your day is. We put so much fluff time in there about on your phone. How much time are you on your phone? And I take all the excuse away. That book takes every fucking excuse away from you, man, to where you're like, fuck. Well, I guess I got to get after it now.
Yeah.
So that's what it does.
You know, I was reading through this and I found like little parts of my life where I remember doing little things like this. And mm-hmm. I went to MIT when I was there, like 20 years old. It was a battle of my mind. I was trying to like study and get these grades. And I remember writing things all around my mirror and all on my wall during finals week, like, you fucking pussy, you fucking piece of shit. Yep. How bad do you fucking want this? Because it was like 7 days of fucking hell in my own brain. And you know, it was all about whether you were gonna break or not.
Right.
And so I read that, I was like, oh shit, that's the accountability mirror.
Yep.
And then I remember Cookie Jar, I remember later going to Wall Street and having a moment where I'm like, wait a second, these guys are bad motherfuckers, they're masters of the universe. And then I was like, hold on a second. You went to MIT,
that's
you competed
right.
with the fucking best.
That's right.
You're a bad motherfucker. You got straight A's when you were a sophomore. Fuck these guys.
That's right.
And that's your fucking
and
cookie,
that's
jar.
The cookie jar.
That's your cookie jar.
We forget when we get around these people or we get in hard times, whatever it may be, we forget how badass we are. Take a time, go back through your life. I guarantee you there's something in there, like MIT. You can't forget that shit, man. That needs to be like almost number one in the Rolodex. Whenever you get around some bad motherfuckers go like this, whoop, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Dial that in there.
How many of you motherfuckers could have went there and endured that mental hell? Literally, it's just, first of all, getting into MIT, but grinding through it, no, that's a big cookie, man.
I went back to that jar a lot of times without even knowing I was doing it.
Yeah, that's a big cookie.
I must have used that for 10 or 15 years, you know, just always go back. Oh, yeah. Remember, okay, I'm back on point. Let's go.
And remember some of those days you spent studying.
Oh, yeah.
The hours.
All night.
The months.
Oh, yeah.
The months. I can't even imagine. The months.
Caffeine pills.
Oh, yeah.
All night, slapping myself.
Whatever it takes.
And it was no one watching.
No one.
It was all me.
Yep.
And it was, yeah. And then I knew if I slacked. And I was the one I had to fucking answer to.
That's right.
And it didn't matter. And nothing else mattered.
They don't keep you in MIT if you're okay. No. If you're trying. They don't keep you in MIT if you're trying. No. You got to be excelling, man. Period. The whole time.
Yeah, this stuff is real, man. And one other example I found when I came over here and I was in banking, and I've called this the immigrant man sometimes, where I got here and I was like, can I do this? And then I was like, wait a second, I can do this better than these motherfuckers. And I've spoke with a bunch of immigrants that come to London and they're intimidated and they're like, wait a second, I can do this better than these guys.
That's right.
You know, and it's just that flip of the mind. You
that's
know?
Uncommon.
Yeah.
Amongst uncommon.
Yeah.
You got to think that way, man, because if you think the other way, you could bury yourself.
What's next for David Goggins? I mean, technically, the next 20 years, you're going to be going back to the start line.
Yes.
Potentially, you're going to go back before you can go forward.
Right.
I mean, you must know it's still a battle every day.
It is. So, like I said, man, I don't know everything at all. But I have to continue to stay in the battle to get more knowledge. The second you put... So, this is what happens. A lot of people who are motivational speakers, and I don't consider myself a motivational speaker at all. I'm not even that. I don't know what the fuck I am. I'm a teacher, as you know, whatever it is. But the second you think that you got it figured out, a lot of us, like for instance, people who graduate Navy SEAL training, people who graduate anything in life, MIT, they believe if I graduate MIT, that's it. That's the pinnacle. That's when you fail. That's when you're no longer a teacher. That's when you're no longer a leader. That's when you're no longer anything. All you are is an MIT graduate. All I would have been is a Navy SEAL. Most people in society have that mindset. They put this Mount Everest in their mind. Whatever it may be, MIT, SEAL training, Ranger School, CEO, Mount Everest is there. They climb it, they put the flag in there, and they immediately realize, I'm at the highest elevation in the world. So what must you do? I gotta get down. This is the death zone. They don't figure out, how long can I stay up in this motherfucker? How long? I can't stay up here on my own oxygen, so I'm gonna bring up about 50 fucking bottles of O2, because I'm not coming down from here. And that was my mindset. So right now, for me to continue to teach people, I gotta bring a whole fucking bunch of bottles up on Mount Everest. Because once you start coming down, it's over. It's over. Once you get to the top, you gotta stay up there and keep looking for another Mount Everest to climb. But it takes a whole bunch of oxygen, a whole bunch of suffering to do that. So you never arrived. So right now, I know I'm still not shit. All I'm doing is I'm giving you 44 years of knowledge of what I gained. Story's not over yet. I have more knowledge to give, which means I got to hike up some more fucking bottle on top of Mount Everest.
And that's what you're doing now.
That's what I'm doing now.
You're out there as a firefighter and...
Going back to the grind, man. Seeing how the mind works.
Hanging out with 20-year-olds. Digging ditches to make fires stop. I mean, that sounds like brutal work.
It's tough work, man, but it's even, for me now, is that my health is really good. So now I'm getting back into the running aspect of it, the racing, the lonely hours of training. That's where I really, really saw a lot of it. It wasn't in the firefighting, you know, even though it's brutal, the Navy SEAL training, brutal. It was in these long 30, 40 hours, breaking the pull-up record, failing, getting these highs and lows and wanting to leave and saying, ah, man. It's hard to think about you have 100 more miles to go and you've already gone 100 miles and your body's broken. There's not a lot, there's a lot that goes into that, man, and you think a lot out there. There's a lot of growth
right
in that.
So that is gonna be your Mount Everest with the oxygen bottles going forward, that solo work, you think?
Solo work.
That's how you can expand mm-hmm. and evolve and maybe send some more knowledge back to us.
It's all about the solo work, man, because that's where you really dive into it.
I can always see that about you, you know? You always, that seems to be your thing, man. That's like where you're going to like look for that light, you mm-hmm. know? Going out there on your own doing that stuff.
It's hard to find knowledge in a group because everybody's talking, it's too loud.
Right.
It's too noisy, man. Like, you know, you go to New York City, you go to London, traffic, everything going on, everybody's preoccupied. When you're alone, man, in that space, there's no horns honking, there's no people yelling. So in that quiet, there's a lot of darkness in that quiet, man, and you figure out a lot of stuff, whether it be bad or good, you figure it out.
Yeah.
If you stay.
Yeah. Just wondering if you have advice to the younger people of the generation that have been watching us today. And you know, they've grown up in this different world, you know, where everything's Googleable and
right.
everything's right there. It's a world of comfort. It's getting more comfortable all the time. And they see someone like you and they're like, okay, what the hell is this? And, you know, what advice do you give to them for leading a life that can mean something, you know? So when they go up to those pearly gates, that it's heaven, not hell,
right.
that they can give something back and maybe one day, you know, write a book.
The biggest thing is, it's funny you say write a book. One thing I'll leave them is this before I get into that, is if right now, whoever's listening to this, if you wrote a book right now about your life and you gave it to someone, would it change their life for the better? If not, yeah, get to work. But to answer your question about what I would tell people right now is this. There's a process to all this stuff, man. The process starts with, you gotta shut off technology. Yeah, go here.
The following success secrets are only available inside the London Real Tribe, where you get exclusive access and insights from our high-performance guests on wealth creation, productivity, leadership, morning routines, health, and well-being. To join our tribe community, go to londonreal.tv/tribe. Now, let's continue with the show.
Go to a dark place in your mind and figure out what the fuck you want to be. You don't know what you don't want because you don't know what you want to be because you haven't spent time, real time with yourself. Spend time with yourself. Trust me. And once you find that passion and that purpose, your goals, your purpose, everything will just start lining up. And then you'll find the courage to start that journey from that 20 to 100.
It's amazing advice. David, I could talk to you for hours, but you have to promise me you're going to come back and we'll do this another time.
Roger that.
The book is Can't Hurt Me. I can't recommend this enough. And the audio book is Gangster, because after each chapter, David's giving it to you real. I know almost everybody on my team has listened to this. They all went out and did some big things afterwards. And, you know, it's an incredible story. And I love what you're doing. I love how it's just pure with you. You know, it's like, get the book or don't. And I'm living my life and doing my thing.
That's it, man.
You know, and you're a great teacher.
David. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your message. I appreciate you getting vulnerable here, and wishing you all the best on your journey, man.
Thank you much. I appreciate
all right,
it, man.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.